Case number 51 from the Blue Cliff Record. Yuan Wu's pointer. As soon as there is affirmation and denial, you lose your mind in confusion. If you don't fall into grades and stages, then there is no seeking. But say, is letting go right or is holding fast right? At this point, if you have any trace of an interpretive root, you are still stuck in verbal explanations. If you're still involved with devices and objects, then all of this is being like a ghost haunting the fields and forests. Even if you arrive immediately at the point of solitary liberation, you haven't avoided looking back to the village gate from 10,000 miles away. Can you reach it? If you can't, just comprehend this perfectly obvious public case. To test, I am citing it. Look. And the case. When Shui Feng was living in a hut, there were two monks who came to pay their respects. Seeing them coming, he pushed open the door of the hut with his hand, popped out, and said, "What is it?" A monk also said, "What is it?" Feng lowered his head and went back inside the hut. Later, the monk came to Yantou. Yantou asked, "Where are you coming from?" The monk said, "I've come from Lingnan." Tou said, "Did you ever go to see Shui Feng?" The monk said, "I went there." Tou said, "What did he have to say?" The monk recounted the preceding story. Tou said, "What did he say?" The monk said, "He said nothing. He lowered his head and went back inside the hut." Tou said, "Alas, it's too bad I didn't tell him the last word before. If I had told him, no one on earth could cope with old Shui." At the end of the summer, the monk again brought up the preceding story to ask for instruction. Tou said, "Why didn't you ask earlier?" The monk said, "It's not so easy to ask you about this." Tou said, "Though Shui Feng and I were born on the same stem, we do not die on it. If you want to know the last word, it is only just this." And the poem by Hong Zhe, "The last word is spoken for you. The time of light and dark, pair by pair. Born of the same lineage, they share the knowledge. Dying of different lineages, they're utterly separated. Utterly separated. Even old Yellowhead the Buddha and old Blue Eyes Bodhidharma have yet to discern. South, north, east, west, let us return. And in the depths of the night, together, look at the snow on the thousand crags." So throughout this coming and going training period, this ongo, we've heard lots and lots of koans, our favorites or the ones that have been instructive to us in some ways. All of the teachers and senior students who've come forward to speak about this have shared something very close to their hearts. And David and I have been lucky enough to give a number of talks, and Diane and Steve have given a number of talks, and Ed has given a couple, James Cordova gave a couple. Many talks that went all over the map around this koan treasure. And I'm very aware of the fact that although there will be one more talk, and that will be given by our Shuso, Steve, tonight, although he doesn't know what the topic will be, because the way the Shuso Hosen Shiki ceremony works is that David and I have nefariously planned to give him a case to speak on, and he has to just speak on it without any planning. And then we'll come forward and ask him questions or something. This is the last talk that, in quotes, gets to be planned for for this entire training period. And I was very aware of all of the koans that we haven't talked about. There are so many, there are thousands of them in our Boundless Way Zen koan training. So many that come from so many years ago, people just like us engaged in this great work, engaged in really with great sincerity trying to get to the bottom of things and then trying to learn to live an awakened life. A life that is somehow the fruition of all of the time we spend on the cushion and then all the time we spend integrating our insights into daily life. So beautiful, this poem. There's so much in this koan, there's no way I could talk about all of it. But the ending of the poem, when Hongjir says, south, north, east, west, let us return. We wander everywhere, but the point is the returning. And in the returning, in the depths of the night, everyone together looks at the snow on the thousand crags. Every one of us here at the end of this winter training period can see something together that's the same. That is something that moves our hearts in some way, that brightens our mind. Something that is maybe just an intimation of the great way of old yellow head and old blue eyes. That's not Frank Sinatra, that's Bodhidharma. An old yellow head, I like that. His little curly head, the Buddha. So, how are we to engage with this life? How are we to come to terms with a life that is so full of suffering? This realization that we've come to throughout this period, that when we call out in our sorrow and in our desperation and our great need, it's not something else that answers. The universe answers because we are in fact it. And still we ask, what is it? What is it? So one of the reasons that I love this particular koan is that it's a story about two of my favorite characters in Zen, Shui Feng and Yanto, who were Dharma brothers who trained together in the monastery of Dei Shan. And Dei Shan, as some of you might remember, was in his youth a great scholar and a bit of a jerk, a bit of a dick, an arrogant person, who thought he knew everything. And some of us fall into that trap. We know it intimately, maybe. And he was instructed by an old woman who lived by the side of the road. He was an expert on the Diamond Sutra. And she tested him in that famous story where she says, oh, what's that on your back? And it's all his notes on the Diamond Sutra. And she says, oh, the Diamond Sutra. Oh, I love the Diamond Sutra. Can I ask you a question? And if you answer it, I'll give you your tea cakes and your tea for free. Tea cakes comes from an old word in Chinese that literally means mind refreshers. And he agrees because he knows everything. So he'll get some free snacks. And she says, it says in the Diamond Sutra that there is no mind of the past, and there's no mind of the present, and there's no mind of the future. So which mind is going to be refreshed by my mind refreshers? And he is so stunned that he asks one of my favorite questions in the whole of Zen history, are there any Zen teachers around here? And she, to her great credit, we never know her name. She's one of the many women that are unnamed in our lineage chant, one of the many unknown souls who kept the Dharma alive so that It's been transmitted all the way to this moment. She said, yes, there's one up the hill, down the road. And he goes to, Deshan goes to meet this guy, Lung Tan, and they have a wonderful exchange where Deshan is awakened. And the next day he burns all his notes on the Diamond Sutra, still arrogant, still thinking that this absoluteness will somehow represent the subtlety of this great way. And over the many years, we hear about Deshan in a number of different stories and koans. He softens and he softens and he softens. And then when he's very, very old, actually 3 years before he dies, he's saddled with these two characters in his monastery, Shui Feng and Yanto. And Yanto is kind of like the Shuso. He's kind of like Steve. He's the guy who keeps everything together. Brilliant and incisive and warm and compassionate, kind of like Steve. And not letting anything get by him, kind of like Steve. And then there's Shui Feng, who is actually older than the Shuso, older than Yanto, who is the cook, kind of like Ed. And they love each other. They, in fact, have many, many adventures. They leave the monastery after their training with Deshan, and they wander together, even though Ed never, well, I won't call him Ed anymore because the story kind of veers off, but even though Shui Feng doesn't have an awakening under Deshan, he does with his Dharma brother. He does with Shui Feng. Shui Feng points him to the true teaching. And there's a point when they're still living at the monastery with Deshan, when Deshan comes down too early for the midday meal. And Shui Feng scolds his teacher. He says, what are you doing here? It's not time for the meal yet. I'll ring the bell when it's time. You should know better. And Deshan hangs his head and walks back to his room. And Shui Feng's kind of troubled by this and talks to his buddy Yanto and says, what's going on? Yanto sees an opportunity and he says, oh, our teacher, great as he is, he still doesn't know the final word of Zen. So now, fast forward in the story, many, many, many years later, both of these guys are teachers in their own right. They've been subjected to all kinds of difficulties in their lives. There were at least two historical purges of Buddhism in their lifetime, maybe more, but in one of them, Yanto had to leave his work as a Zen teacher and become a ferryman. He ferried people back and forth across a river. And Shui Feng became a hermit, and he lived in his hermitage. And that's where we get to at the beginning of this story. Shui Feng is living in his hermitage, and two monks just happened to come by. And I love that last night David talked about Zhaozhou coming to meet the two hermits. This is kind of the reverse of that story in a way. The story last night, as many of you were there for it, was about Zhaozhou asking, is anybody in? Is anybody in? And one by one, the hermits come out and put up their fists. And Zhaozhou has something to say to each of them, something different. But in this story, it's Shui Feng, it's the hermit himself, who bursts out. And I love this translation by the Cleary brothers. It's very vivid, the way he comes out. He pushed open the door of the hut with his hand, popped out, and said, what is it? See if you can imagine that. What would you do if you're waiting in the Doksan line and one of the teachers opens the door and pops out and looks at you and says, what is it? What would you do? It's a great moment. What is it? And who knows what he meant? I mean, I tend to think he meant, what is it? But he could have just been an old hermit, annoyed. What is it? And one of the monks speaks up, and it's very cool. It's kind of brave. It's really sweet. He says, What is it? He mirrors back, a call and response. And then this moment that if you didn't know the history, you wouldn't maybe know how important it is. Shui Feng hangs his head and goes back into his hermitage. Just like his old teacher, Dei Shan. They had that exchange. What are you doing here? The meal's not ready. And Dei Shan hangs his head. What is this head hanging? Such an interesting gesture. A nonverbal communication. What does it mean? Does it mean I'm fed up with you? Does it mean, oops, sorry? Does it mean, well, just better go back into my hermitage? The important thing here is not to settle on any one interpretation, but to really go deeply into what it might mean if you were truly in touch with your awakened nature, which all of us are sometimes, and some of us last a little longer than others, and then the forgetting happens. What would it be like if you were in that place and somehow or other you were met with something that was not the great, bright, awakened nature, but what was another version of it, the angry, awakened nature, the annoyed, awakened nature, the I'm trying to show you how smart I am, awakened nature. What would you do? And what a beautiful thing. He just hangs his head and goes back in. And this monk, we never learn his name, but he goes to study with Yanto. And Yanto, of course, now has been reestablished as a teacher. He's no longer a farrier. And he accepts these people into his Anga, into his summer training period, the winter and the summer training periods, these three-month traditional training periods. And this guy waits till the very end, the very last day, which is also almost in a few hours this day, and asks him about this story. And Yanto, of course, already knew it because he'd asked when the guy first arrived. Oh, you saw Shui Feng. And he must have been thinking, I imagine, my old dear friend. And what does he have to say for himself now? How's he showing up as a Zen teacher? What's his instruction? So finally the monk asks about it. And Yanto asks him, why didn't you ask about this earlier? And the translation by John Tarrant and Joan Sutherland, which we use in our koan practice, is very beautiful. It is not so easy to ask you about this. It is not so easy to ask you about this. It's true. It's not so easy to ask about the great matter. It's not so easy to ask when we don't know, when we're not sure. We like to come from certainty. We like to come from imagining that there's some body of knowledge, that if we attain it all, we will be great adepts. But this way is not about attaining vast amounts of knowledge. I was speaking with one of you the other day about awakening, and I realized, and I think I said out loud to you privately, that I don't have any special talents or attributes that automatically might have turned me into a Zen teacher. But there is this great experience or small experience or certain experience of awakening. And I have faith in it. And that's why I teach. That's where the teaching comes from. Not anything in my head about what I figured out. Not anything that I remember, even though you know, some of you know me, how much I love these stories, and it's kind of amazing that I can remember all their names, and if there was a Zen Jeopardy, I would probably win a lot of money. Who is the cook in Dei Shan's monastery? What is Shui Feng? I'm That's a wonderful image, isn't it? We can just hang out there for a moment. Relax. So this great faith, not in what I know, but in something that was revealed to me and keeps being revealed to me over and over and over again. This is where I join hands with all these people who lived so long ago and who might not even have existed, because the whole history of Zen is, in a way, one of these marvelous stories with many, many characters and many, many events that may or may not have happened, but they're instructive because they touch our heart. If we really allow ourselves to open to these stories as stories about us, not people who lived 1,500 years ago, but people who are alive right now and sitting in this Zendo, then everything begins to be clear. And then we can see through the eyes of Shui Feng coming out of his hermitage and saying, what is it? And we can be this monk who says, it's not so easy to ask you about it. It's not so easy to ask you about it. It's not so easy to do this practice. And then Yantou says, Shui Feng and I were born on the same stem. And of course he's referring to having the same teacher, Deshan. But we do not die on it. And here we are again in the territory of same and different. Why did Zhao Zhou appear to praise one of the hermits in the story last night and appear to criticize the other? Where is the difference? Where is the sameness? It might have been the same hermit. So what is going on? The mind can't conceive of it. How every one of us shares the same heart of awakening, but manifests it completely uniquely. There will never be another Shui Feng. There'll never be another Yantou. There'll never be another Steve or Diane or Ed. There'll never be another any of us. And how wonderful that is. And yet even though we wander about endlessly trying to figure out what it means to be a person of the way, eventually we come home. We can't help it. Eventually we come home, and then all of us together see the snow on the distant peaks. Thank you. So, please make yourselves comfortable for our Dharma dialogue.
And as we begin, I want to introduce one of our old Dharma brothers and friends, Paul Gerstein, who is the teacher of the Living Dharma Center Zen group. So, Paul, we're delighted.
It's very wonderful to be here. And thank you all.
Yeah.
So I think almost all of you know what happens next, maybe not so much Paul. So this is our Dharma dialogue, and you can both be comfortable and be curious and ask questions or make comments, observations about your practice, about the koan, about anything.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, kind of like two things pulling out of your talk. So, you know, one was the last word. You know, that's such a hook, you know, because we're all looking for the last word. You know, I don't have it. She's got it, he's got it, you've got it, you know, someone's got it, I don't have it. So they've got that piece of paper with your koan on it, you know. That's what I thought immediately when she said the last word, you know. We all want it.
Yeah, we have all the answers upstairs locked in a vault.
Excuse me.
only one word.
That's right. That's actually a great moment. When he says, so the final word is only just this. Three words. Wait a minute. What?
And so we can feel ourselves being hooked by that, you know. And then there's also your pointing to, which has to do with Deshan, you know, bowing after with his bowls, and then is it Shui Feng who's in the hut?
Yes,
Shui Feng. I don't have Melissa's memory with all these characters. And Shui Feng, you know, bowing after, what's this, you know? Mm-hmm. And there's something about with having this heart opening, you know, and this entrusting that allows us to bow, you know, that no matter what may arise. And last night I think David talked about you know, life being the checking that goes on, you know, like, so you go to your teachers and they check you, and you have your life, and things are constantly checking. And how do we meet that checking, you know? Do we meet it with, where's that last word? Just if I just had the last word. Or do we meet it with, so not resignation in bowing, but a bowing to, I don't know, and a bowing to, just like my great faith and my open heart and whatever arises that's checking me, you know.
Well, and this possibility of bowing as our response, you know, of fully meeting whatever comes. And as you talk, I'm so conscious of all the different kinds of bows. Mm-hmm. You know, the bowing of the head, and, you know, so many things this can mean. And certainly my bows, as I practice, go through the whole range of, you know, sometimes the resignation, I don't think I'll ever get it, or they'll never get it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes this bow of great gratitude. Mm-hmm. In the face of everything.
For me, it was the monk. You know, the monk who waits to the end of Anga. Because it's so difficult to ask a question, and it's every Dokusan line I think I've ever been in. And it's really easy to formulate, for me, to formulate the story question, the one that's dead. But actually being able to sit there on the line and walk into Dokusan, and walk up to the end of Ango, and actually have, you know, something there beating in my hand is so hard. I mean, I just really sympathize with him.
Yeah, and I think that I have a vague recollection of giving a talk on this call before and having it be all about Dokusan. Somehow that's in my head. That might have been true. Who knows?
Probably another Senexit house.
No. I think it was here. But the instruction in Dokusan is not to wait.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And yet, right, you're pointing to how hard it is. The Cleary's translation is, I didn't want to be casual. But you can see that too. You know, this is so important. Yeah. I didn't want to just bring it up and have it be this light thing. Mm-hmm. It's really important to me.
I wanted to ask it from the bottom of my heart.
Yeah. I don't want to be casual. So they're both, if you use both translations, they'll point to this this depth of yearning that we've been talking about a lot. You know, we all have it.
And something about this, you know, we always talk about how to come into Dokusan, and of Dokusan is designed to put us on the spot. Mm-hmm. You know, there is something, we are checked by ourselves. And so I love you really articulating, so I want to present something, so I wrap something up. But this longing for something else that we're so afraid we don't know how to do.
And that's exactly why I, at least, wind up wrapping it up.
So right.
It's kind of like, here, take this.
Yeah.
Right.
Don't put your finger into my heart.
Yeah,
because
right.
It really might hurt.
Yeah. Right. Actually, that's a really, thank you for that insight, because that is what we do. It's a protection. We don't really, we know the teacher can see us, and we don't want that. We don't want
right.
that kind of touch
right.
to be touched.
We'll
do everything we can.
And you can imagine him sitting through the entire summer.
Right.
And
we really want it. This is what we really want. But, yeah.
Well, and he came forward at the very end.
He did.
But he didn't. He came forward, but not in a neat way.
Life is messy.
Yeah, and somehow so sweet for him to present not his great success.
Right.
He didn't present, here's my insight, but presented his failure. And that was exactly the success. Yeah.
And I can see how somebody's saying, so I'll present my failure. Right. But just stay away from my heart. Yeah. So it's so delicate. It's
right.
just so delicate.
It's not easy.
It is not easy to ask about this.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you.
His answer to the master in the hut, he said, "What is it?" And he answered right away, "What is it?" It was spontaneous. He didn't think about it. It just came out. It's later he thought about it. Then he doubted himself. Wasn't sure. You know, I didn't really understand. But even the bowing of the head and walking back in, he was saying it's very difficult to ask. Each of these are exactly it. It's just when you don't step back from it, you see it. When you're in it, totally being it. Whatever the spontaneous thing is, you're already manifesting it. So it's the stepping back, I think I didn't get it, and then we're back in the ordinary realm of comparison and all the rest of it. But I think his Japanese name was Tozan, am I correct? Tozan's bowls.
Disha.
Tozan, I remember.
Tokusan.
Tokusan, yes, sorry.
What is Tokusan? Yes.
Absolutely.
It's $100
for you. You know, all of a sudden, they hook you.
Right.
He didn't know the last word.
That's
you know,
right.
Tokusan, I came too early, and he walked away with his bowl. He didn't make a protest. He didn't explain himself. He just walked away. Later, he doesn't know the last word. What's this last word? It's here everywhere, in my failures, in my doubts, in my suffering, in my crying. Each of these are manifesting when I don't step out of it, when I don't separate myself. I think that's a deep truth in these koan. Presenting each of these things, the stumbling, the forgetting, the losing, are all manifesting it, shining it, shining it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was caught again by the woman. You know, you sort of go through the story, and part of me is like, where are we going here? And I'm sort of trying to find my way, and then it's funny how these different elements of these stories come out. You know, and the woman who presents the Dharma, and then the teacher, the seeker, asks, where is a Zen teacher? And then her great humility, you know, her great not needing to be the teacher. You know, quite a challenge to, as we occupy different roles, to not get hooked in it in some way. You mentioned those hooks, you know. You know, in the story, so sweet and no need. Oh, yeah. Over there, you know, misdirection one more time.
She can see he's not ready for a Zen teacher, so she better send him to
it. Oh, you better go see Paul down the road.
That's what you're looking for.
You're looking for a Zen teacher.
Right, yes, yeah. Oh, not the true Zen teacher. A Zen teacher, yeah, I know. Yeah.
There's another piece here too. You know when that monk says, "What is this?" You know, we do. It is great. It's spontaneous and all that, but there must be some little hint of wanting praise. You know, look how spontaneous I am. I just did this thing. The Zen. There's almost a Zen cliche of just repeating. You know, what the other person says. And that can go on forever. There's another koan where somebody shouts and the teacher says, well, that's a shout on me. And then he shouts again. He says, well, okay, one shout, two shout, where's this going? It's just really great. You know, so there are these, you know, what? You're not going to recognize me? Mm-hmm. I just was spontaneous. Isn't that what we're supposed to be? And then he must have been speculating on this for just months and months. You know, on his way to Yanto's monastery, and on his way to ask the question finally, and last night was so much about that as well. You know, those two hermits weren't waiting for praise, right? So, and Jajam knew that, so he could say anything.
Yeah. Well, and so this, you know, tying in what Paul you're saying, this human tendency we have to step back. Mm-hmm. Or to sort of game the system, you know, that we all step forward effortlessly, and then we wonder about it, or some self-clinging in it, and how hard it is not to check ourselves. You know, we want to make sure, we want some external validation, and then in the stepping back, to not step back from the stepping back. Right? So in the stepping back itself, there is an aliveness of the self-doubt. Right? That we're not separate from the Buddha, from the great mind. All these appearances occur in the mind of the Tathagata. So it's just stepping back. Full manifestation. Yeah. It's so hard to come forward. You know? Really. Endlessly held in some way.
Because it really strikes me if you say, oh, okay, so I did it now, I just shouldn't step back. Right? then you're stepping back, you know, you're stepping back from your stepping back.
Yeah.
You know, and this stepping back is manifesting it as well, right? So to step back from the stepping back doesn't quite seem to match either.
Well, I mean, if I'm following you, we can strategize and box up, you know, like Ed was saying, make a little presentation gift of anything.
Yeah, all the great teachings.
Yeah, you know, so spontaneity and stepping back and coming forward. It's like, so the real thing is, you know, and here it is. People, I got a really sweet email from somebody who doesn't really practice much, but was wondering how to work with anger. And my, you know, I'm in the middle of this retreat. The first thing I thought was, you should sit. You should learn to be with whatever arises. And then you can be with anger. But it's not something we can cogitate about and figure out. I know what to do. And yet we do endlessly about practice. And I think Doksan is one of those places where that comes up big time. It's like a big mirror showing us how we're making so much stuff up to look good or to protect ourselves or whatever it is that we have going for us. And the real instruction is that you can't plan it ahead of time, but sitting teaches us how to be awake to whatever is arising. Mm-hmm. And so what's arising in the Doksan room is what's arising in the Doksan room, and it doesn't happen anywhere else, and it will never happen again, and it never happened before. It's fresh. You know, so we can come in and make all our plans. And sometimes, most teachers, I think in Bama Sui, we kind of let people hang themselves before we ring the bell. But some, like you were talking about Sasaki, he just rings the bell. He doesn't even here. Wait.
It's amazing, just, you walk in the door.
Like, no.
You know, you make your bow.
Try again.
Because he's looking for some presence, some energy, some look on your face, some thing in your
eyes. Which we're also looking for, but we're just
slower. I don't want to figure out how to get that.
Yeah.
Looks super odd.
There it is again.
Right.
Yeah.
What's he looking for? Well, and I have to tell, speaking of gaming the system, my first retreat, it was 4 interviews a day with Sasaki, and he's not a perfect Zen master.
Oh,
this guy is a sexual predator, and really deeply off track, but also deeply present.
Did you say?
Yeah. But I decided that it was a 7-day retreat, and I decided the last night I would sit up all night and I would really get to the bottom and I would really present it. I would really bring it in. So there's a morning service that goes on and on and on, and then people start talking to each other. And I said, is it over? And I said, yes. And I had missed the last night. I thought there was one more night, and I was really good to do it.
That's a
there
good
it was.
Story. Oh, well.
So I was waiting.
I'm really confused. I mean, what are you supposed to do during Doksan? I'm sorry.
No, it's perfect, even really. Well, you know, and here's where the form is very helpful, right? So you're holding the stick or the cushion, and the bell rings.
Right.
So you pass it. That's number one. Then you stand up. And you walk over. And then if you're going upstairs, you walk upstairs. And then you sit down. And the bell rings again. And you get up. And right? I can stop now. But then when you get to the room, you open the door, you bow. All those little moments are all it. And at Sashin, we have a different form, which you won't have to learn. But you actually wait in line, and there's a bell in front of you. And when the teacher rings his or her bell, you strike the bell twice, and then you come in. And boy, the teacher, I'm jazzed, the teacher sitting there waiting. The sound of the bell, the footsteps, the way the door opens. You can't be anybody but yourself. None of that is incidental. And then when you finally sit down and the interview, in quotes, begins, it's been going on for a really long time. And then your only job is just to, then you say your name and you practice. Again, the form holds you. Mm-hmm. And then what arises for you in that moment is your presentation. And it's not what you were thinking about when you were sitting in the chair. It's not what you were thinking about in the Zendo. It's not what you planned. It's not the little package that Ed was talking about. It's you. And you can't help it. That's the funny thing. You can't help it. You shine through. It's so you don't, you can't strategize it or plan it in it, but you will. We all do.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah.
No, that's a great question, because that's the heart of it. You know, I was just thinking of I had an uncle who died when he was 99, and we always tell this story about him. We asked him what his day was like. And he described his day just like I described Doksan to you. He said, well, first, I wake up. And then I open my eyes. And then I sit up. And then my feet touch the ground. He was very short. And then I stand up. And at a certain point, David and I were talking to him. And David finally, when he got to, I put my tea cake in the toaster. David said, okay, thanks, Uncle. Oh, we get it. This is like 5 minutes later. But you know, that's the life of attention. So he was very old, but he was also very, very attentive to everything. And that's what we're asking for. Awake to. And once you're awake to the next moment, the rest of it collapses into nothingness. You're not doing it anymore. You're just doing this and then this. The final word of Zen. Only just this. Yeah. And it's just a great question to ask. Because now all these other people will benefit from it. And it was too hard to ask.
I have the sensation often, because stepping over the threshold to leave the Dokusan room has this element of escape. And I sometimes have this, you know, I have all these things lined up that I can now do now that I've stepped over the threshold. Before coming back here. But there's this sensation that you haven't left the Dokusan room sometimes, that by the time you've gotten back to the Zendo and done a little escape routine, you've stepped back in. Mm-hmm. That you haven't gotten out at all. And I don't know what that means. Is that what exactly it feels like?
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing to say.
Well, because the real issue is us. Right? The teacher is actually the least of our worries. Because we have to, you know, the Doksan room is our life.
Right.
And that hopefully in the Doksan, in this conversation about what's alive, how is it that we touch that? Both the teacher leans into it and you lean into it. It vivifies or it comes alive in some moment. And so lovely to, as Melissa said, the Doksan starts before you cross the threshold and then continues. You know, something happens and nothing special. And it's not like you need to, you know, run out, write notes, oh, this and that. But there is some way that we're, you know, stepping deeper into our life. And that's the real thing. Yeah.
That's what I was going to say. I don't feel like I've escaped the Dokusan room.
He says, clutching his arms, rocking back and forth.
13 days.
Well, and Chris often gives the instruction, which is part of our Zendo form, that the Doksan room extends up to the Zendo extends to the Doksan room, so you don't have to bow when you go in and out of the Zendo during the Doksan period. And it's that same thing that that you were bringing in, Wayne, and that David commented on. You know, that, but I think realistically, yeah, it's like, you know, practice every moment. Doksan every moment. Yeah, so let's do that now. We'll sit for a few moments before we have communion.